We are back, unspooling tales of travel for your listening pleasure. And by the way, there is something we need to know at this juncture, which is how many of you are out there listening to Radio Parallax? We would very much like to hear from you. You can weigh in on this any way you like, but drop us a line to let us know that you're listening. You can do so at info@radioparallax.com. We especially want to hear from you if you're listening via terrestrial radio, i.e. KDVS 90.3 FM. We are entertaining the notion of taking a hiatus in this election year to see what's going to happen. And your feedback will help us make some decisions. So please, drop us a line at info@radioparallax.com. As you might well imagine, a topic which came up frequently in our travels, being that we were Americans, was the question of Donald J. Trump. I think most of the world tends to have a rather low opinion of politicians, but I think in many instances people just had a way of just, you know, looking down on us a bit for the fact that we gave the world Donald J. Trump. In fact, on our very first night of this journey, while in London, trying to break up the trip rather than, you know, take an 11-hour change in time zones, one of our assistants in the hotel in London was an aspiring journalist from Italy, I believe. I guess she was studying in London, and she sort of wanted to feel us out about where we stood on Trump. Now, apparently, a night or two before, she'd sat down with someone who was a very, according to her description, a very bright person, well-informed person, who was extolling for 2 hours the virtues of Donald Trump and why his return to the presidency would be a wonderful thing for the nation and the world. I think she was somewhat amazed to have been informed by this person about all the wonderful things Donald Trump was likely to do. So when she sort of gingerly posed the question of what we thought of Trump, and we quickly responded with, oh, he's an idiot, I think she seemed to be a bit relieved. And yes, we do need to talk about Donald Trump and things that have been taking place politically, and we will get to that, maybe not on this show, but certainly on the next one. We have a lot of material that's piled up since Mr. Millen and I last recorded a program, and we do feel it is necessary to talk about such things, but not right now. As mentioned in the last segment, yours truly is not someone who's been on a lot of tours, but I enjoyed this one as well as I enjoyed the one in Africa 2 years ago. And I do want to point out that not having to figure out everything that you want to do on a daily basis has an upside. It turned out when we got to London and we're a bit jet-lagged and we're trying to find our way across the city to visit the British Museum, we did discover that there was a boat that goes up the Thames and acts as a wonderful means of transportation. And I must say, I was impressed to taking this boat ride up the Thames, that it compared in many respects fairly closely to the Sacramento River. In some places, it did not appear to be wider than the Sacramento. But if you do go to London and are thinking about traipsing about, I would suggest you look up this ability to take one of these boats up and down the river, because you get to see a lot of very interesting scenery, including Parliament and Big Ben, if you're into giant clocks. Anyway, we made our way, jet-lagged, across that portion of London nearest the British Museum to arrive just when it was closing. Now, why the Brits find it necessary to close their great epic museum at 5 o'clock, I guess I'll never know. So, alas, I did not get a second look at the Rosetta Stone or various and sundry Egyptian mummies. And by the way, I would note that I do not have the great indignancy held by many who talk about the theft of archaeologic finds from various parts of the world to be housed in museums, because I've noticed that the people that treasure them and house them in museums take good care of them. I know that the Greeks will not shut up about the lifting of the Elgin marbles from the outside of the Parthenon and relocating them to the British Museum. But I would also note that these were the same Greeks that, during one of their wars with the Turks, decided it would be a good idea to store ammunition inside the Parthenon, resulting in a direct hit by Turkish forces and blowing the hell out of the temple, which has been reconstructed. But anyway, yeah, it's nice to hook up with a tour and not have to show up late to the museums. Although, as mentioned previously, the National Museum in Azerbaijan was closed, so instead they took us to another museum dedicated to the former president, which had sections on dolls. And for some inexplicable reason, a section on art by a Ghanaian artist. What this Ghanaian was doing in Baku, Azerbaijan, I never figured out. After viewing his artwork, I do have a sneaking suspicion that I know why he was asked to leave Ghana. And one delightful couple we were traveling with were Danes. They'd previously run a winery and were now running a brewery. And Gunhild, the female of the duo, had mentioned that she had an art gallery back in Denmark. When we entered the portion of the museum acting as this mini art gallery of the artist from Ghana, I turned to Gunhild and said, "I suppose that your art is nothing like this." She responded with, "Oh no." And I responded with, "Good!" Which earned quite a chuckle from the both of them. And speaking of Trump, as we were just a moment ago, we could not resist asking them, as a couple of Danish citizens, whether Greenland really was for sale. They assured us it was not. Aww. Another couple from New York, Bruce and Meredith, stunned me by revealing that before joining this three-country tour in the Caucasus, they had in fact done something we'd mentioned on this program many years back as something would be fun to do, which was visiting the stands. Utilizing the same tour company, they had in fact gone east to west through Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, and Turkmenistan, which pretty much nobody does. They had more than a few fascinating stories to tell about these off-the-beaten-track countries. One of the most depressing, for me, was the fact that Kazakhstan is apparently enjoying a boom in tourism, courtesy of Borat.
Nice.
Yes, even though Sacha Baron Cohen's character looks nothing like, acts nothing like, has got nothing to do with Kazakhstan, except that it was a funny name, Kazakhstan, and nobody knew where it was, it apparently has piqued the interest of many people wanting to travel to that part of the world. They're experiencing a boom in visitors that somehow want to do the Borat tour.
Sign me up.
They also mentioned that Turkmenistan was a very odd place, which did not seem to welcome tourists. The country told the visitors that it had 6 million residents, and in fact, upon research, you find out it's actually half that. I asked Bruce about the Aral Sea in Turkmenistan, and he drew a blank, and I realized, well, I guess that's one part of the country the tourist industry is not anxious to show the world. Since, when yours truly was in high school, it appeared on the map of Asia as, in fact, the world's fourth largest lake. It had a giant fishing industry, which fed the USSR. And if you checked out National Geographic in the last couple decades, you will note that you will see photographs of large rusting ships sitting on the desert sands. Yes, the Russians got the bright idea back in the 1960s, and I think I remember this, actually, as a child. Something in the Weekly Reader about how they were going to grow cotton in this part of the world, in the USSR. And, of course, to grow cotton, you need water, and to get water, you got to basically divert rivers. And if you divert rivers, guess what happens to the lake that depends upon the river for replenishment? It dries up, yes. I'm rather sorry to note that Bruce, who was obviously a very bright guy, was of a rather taciturn nature. I tried to get him at one point to talk a little bit about New York banking, which, you know, being a New York banker, I'm sure he knows a great deal about. And he did mention as part of some of the due diligence I think his bank was doing that he got tangled up in the Enron affair. And boy, did I want to hear more about that. But he simply said, yeah, they wanted me to testify, and I kicked it upstairs to my boss. And sad to say, that's about all I got out of him.
Nothing on Madoff?
I think I mentioned the name. He didn't bite. Now, Ken, who I mentioned in the last segment, was the opposite of being taciturn. He was always talking about this, that, and the other, usually in a very interesting way. And he was traveling with his mother, being a very dutiful son. I must say, he should get an award for how well he was taking care of his mom, who, it turned out, was a former vice president at Lockheed. And she did talk briefly about crossing paths with Frank Carlucci and Caspar Weinberger and other secretaries of defense while she worked for Lockheed. And she certainly had a rather sanguine view of military procurement and how things get done in Washington. I decided the best thing for me was to just shut up on my salty opinions on such matters, which was good because she was a great lady. At one point, she was talking about how it is that once these weapon systems are built, and of course, they always, always, always run over budget, which is something she just accepted as part of nature. It surprised me a bit to find out that the big reward for these weapon systems comes from sales to other countries. And even better than that, you know, once you sell them an aircraft, there's a fortune to be made in supplying them with the spare parts afterwards. Now, I made allusion at the top of the program to her son, Ken, and how useful he was to us later. And here's the deal. He was very high on Tirana, Albania, which he'd just been to like 6 weeks before. He highly recommended the tram outside of town to go up to the top of the mountains. He was very, very complimentary, I guess you'd say, about the color schemes used in the various buildings in Albania, which he thought was quite lively and vigorous. And most importantly, he talked about the Sky Hotel, which at the top of it has a large rotating bar, which gives you a 360-degree view every, like, it turned out, 80 minutes of the city. And I guess I have to jump ahead to part two of the trip, which is leaving the Caucasus Mountains and going to the Balkans, and relating how it was we left Croatia and headed south into Albania. Now, our Croatian tour guide, Ivo, who's been on this program in the past as our plumbing representative, and is, you know, one of the smartest guys I know, did take us around in Croatia to Plitvice National Park in the north, which is one of the major tourist attractions of the country. And I must say, it was really cool taking that trip up to the north. There's a wonderful highway that I think the Germans built, which is a toll road. But let me tell you, well worth the $20 or so it was to drive on a superhighway, basically. Plitvice is one of those areas that has pools of turquoise water with limestone that sort of forms and reforms, dissolves, reforms. Terraced area, quite striking, quite interesting. And the Croatians have done a wonderful job of building pathways, walkways that go around these various series of lakes, a couple dozen in number, I think. But we also learned that by the time we got up to the national park, it was like 3 o'clock. And the park closes at 5 o'clock, making it impossible to take a 3 or 4 hour walk through the park to enjoy its scenic beauty. Yeah, and again, you know, why is it? These are the longest days of the year, you know? I mean, sunset's around 8 o'clock at a higher latitude, even later than that. Why you have to close at 5, I don't know. I think they're just short on help, is my suspicion. But the original plan called for going up to Plitvice, visiting that, and then going into Bosnia to go through Sarajevo on the way back to Dubrovnik. Well, that just didn't happen. Bosnia and Herzegovina has no superhighway running through it, as far as we know, so it would have been a very tangled, convoluted, long drive home. So we decided that, in fact, had to be put off till the next visit to the Balkans. But the plan was to go south afterwards, down into Montenegro, which is immediately south of Croatia, on to Albania, and then take a trip up to the mountains to Lake Ohrid, which is in Macedonia, or as everybody else seems to refer to it, Macedonia. Our good friend Ivo was reluctant to take his Mercedes-Benz down to Albania, as it turned out, for excellent reason. So we rented a car. And I got to tell you, it was a vivid moment when we're sitting in the car rental agency, in this case, Hertz. And in response to the question of where do you plan to go, with the answer Albania, the shocked, horrified look on the woman's face said a great deal. said to her, "Well, your facial expression conveys a great deal of information." She said, "I haven't said anything." I go, "Well, you don't have to." Her assistant then chimed in and said, "We cannot tell you that you can't go to Albania. But if you do, your insurance will not be valid. It will only be valid in Montenegro, not in Albania or Macedonia." But he added, "You can get insurance at the border." This is something I think familiar to anyone who's taking a trip down into Mexico. You can buy Mexican insurance and feel more secure about your driving around south of the border. As it turned out, when we did get around to crossing that border from Montenegro into Albania, we did not see any offices that were offering Albanian insurance. And I got to say, our passage into Albania was somewhat cursory. We handed our passports over. He looked at each one and handed them straight back without stamping anything. The attitude seems to be, "Oh, you want to visit Albania? Come on down." At any rate, the driving experience in that country did seem to immediately become somewhat of a white-knuckled affair. Not so in the country. The roads in the country weren't too bad. But when you got to the capital, you discovered that you were no longer in Kansas, Toto. For example, remember when you were learning how to drive and you were being educated about driving and parking and such things, and it was specifically pointed out that double parking is not allowed, which if you're like me, caused you to say, "What's double parking?" When told that's parking your car on the outside of already parked cars, I remember thinking, what idiot would do that? Well, jumping many decades into the future, it's now clear that half of Albania will do that. And the Albanians decided that one thing that would be wise to perhaps save money on when it comes to highway transportation would be just to eliminate traffic signals. And although it does seem hard to believe, I'm not just talking about traffic circles. I'm talking about other intersections with coming in like a letter Y. That just were unregulated. Now, at this point, we realized that we were in possession of a vehicle worth, 20,000 euros, and in possession of, in fact, no insurance. They told us back at the rental office that if something happens to you in Albania, you're on your own. You have to get this car back to us. This made for a rather unpleasant experience. And then there's the matter of GPS, which we were counseled from various sources did not work well in Albania. So it was when, after fighting, in white-knuckle fashion, various streets in the capital, including one that had a very prominent traffic accident stopping everything on the other side of the road, we got to where we thought the Sky Hotel would be. And, well, it wasn't there. Now, as it happened, we turned the car around, and Elise looked up and said, "That's it, down there," because the distinctive rotating bar was evident from several blocks away. So drove the car over to what we thought would be the Sky Hotel. At this point, having been inconvenienced by at least 200 people who were double parked, putting their flashers on and just parking on the side of the road, I realized now it was my turn, baby. So I too double parked, put on my flashers, and sent out the other two to see if they could find a hotel room, which they did. In fact, it was the last hotel room in the Sky Hotel of Tirana, Albania. Because, according to the hotel staff, they'd had a bunch of people coming in from, I believe, Yemen. And this group of college students or whatever they were, researchers, were strictly verboten from having a man and a woman in the same hotel room. So they had to book up a lot of extra hotel rooms, leaving only one for us. But one was enough. Even though for Ivo, we did have to have them bring in a cot, which he was pretty sure in retrospect was an old Albanian army cot. But I ain't complaining. The hotel's price was quite reasonable. I think a little over 100 euros, which for what you got was pretty good. But once we got into the hotel room, we went up to the rotating bar, which fulfilled our expectations of giving us a spectacular view of the city and a sunset. So we thought we were doing pretty doggone well. We figured we could leave Tirana and its congestion, get out into the country roads, which were much better, and head up to Lake Ohrid in Macedonia. But wouldn't you know it, and I was not aware of how this was unfolding, the road, looking at the map I fully expected us to be on, was not the road we were on. Because when one tried to program that route into the map, it kept saying road closed. And if I can fast forward to when we got back to Croatia, Ivo called up a friend of his from Macedonia, and he said, "Oh yeah, they've been saying that for 5 years." Because apparently that road is not closed. We were nevertheless taking an alternative route north of it on a much more windy and smaller road, and discovered that not 5 minutes out of town, that road was in fact closed. Looking back on it, there was only about, I don't know, maybe 30 cars ahead of us. So whatever happened on that highway must have happened, you know, within the last, I'm guessing, half an hour or so, or less. A giant truck was parked athwart the highway so that no one could get around it. There was a cop there. There was an ambulance that was pulling in. And the story emerged that there'd been a rock fall around the bend. How far around the bend, we weren't sure. But, well, investigating what our options might be, a couple of guys appeared coming down the highway pulling luggage. They apparently decided to walk from the other side of where the road had been blockaded, probably calling friends on the other side to come pick them up. I don't know. The word came down that it would be an hour or two before the highway would be open. And of course, if you've ever been to a country like Albania, you would realize that such estimates are not to be taken at face value. We easily envisioned having to sit the entire rest of the afternoon on the side of the highway. So we opted for Plan B. Forget about going to Lake Ohrid. Forget about going to Macedonia and heading to the coast. Ivo pointed out that a friend of his had gone down to the town of Durrës, which I'm not sure I'm pronouncing correctly, which is the big seaport of Albania, and he spent several days down there liking it. The tour books, however, advised against going there because, well, at least going to the beaches there because they said they were heavily polluted. After a white-knuckle drive going back through the northern portions of Tirana to get back on a good highway headed to the coast, well, I can now verify that they weren't lying. Yes, it is polluted. We decided that was not the place to spend the night and headed back to Montenegro, where we stumbled into a lovely hotel on the coast and felt like for the second night in a row we'd been rescued from the wilds. Anyway, I hope all these stories are interesting because we're just about out of time. If they're not, I got to find a way to change gears real fast. Punchline to a lot of this is we really do encourage people to travel on this program and on the many occasions where travel has been in the offing, we felt it was our duty to relate what was found in foreign locales. In the couple minutes we have left, I do want to relate a couple of observations, which were, I think, first and foremost, that we almost never saw in any of the many countries visited what is a familiar sight here in America: the homeless. Yeah, we saw some derelicts. Yeah, we saw some people look like they were stumbling around alcoholics. Yeah, we even ran into some of the Roma people, also known, perhaps pejoratively, as gypsies, who have long ago adopted the lifestyle of the street person. But we saw nothing like the kind of homeless encampments that have taken over cities here in America. Ken, our inveterate traveler and producer in Hollywood, I guess it was L.A. Hollywood, I'm not sure. I'd like to know more about what he does. He'd been on NPR, on an NPR station for many years. The man can talk, and I said, you have to come on Radio Parallax. We just have to figure out what we can talk about. I think he agreed to that, although he didn't specifically say, yeah, I'm yours. But I think we'll have Ken on in the future. When he got on the subject of the homeless situation in L.A., he said he knew six people that had left Los Angeles for parts unknown, being unwilling to put up with how the cities have been taken over by street people and drug addicts. Well, also alcoholics and the insane. To people who say there's nothing we can do about it here in America, I say bull. But that is a topic for another day. Before we left, we noted in the news that there had been reports of street protests in Georgia, in Tbilisi, and when in fact we did actually witness one with our own two eyes. The man in control of Georgia, one who basically went to Russia to make his fortune among other oligarchs, is now trying to steer Georgia away from the EU, which most Georgians are keen to become a part of, and more in the direction of Vladimir Putin's Russia. Like everyone else, we'll have to see how that unfolds over the next year or two. And because we're pretty much out of time, I can't tell you about the archaeological findings in Dmanisi of Homo erectus, dating back something like 1.8 million years ago, or our sobering visit to the Genocide Museum in Armenia. But hey, we're going to do more shows. Could come up. Anyway, something else we're going to talk about in future installments are a book I picked up while traveling titled A Short History of the World in 50 Lies.
Only 50?
I guess this is volume one. This program was produced by Edward McMillan, as they all are. Our thanks to Guy Tortorisi over at KDVS and the good people at the station. I'm Douglas Everett. This is Radio Parallax. And we will have for you a freshly produced program a week from today, talking about all the things in the world that have taken place of late. In the meantime, to give us encouragement or just to comment, don't forget to drop us a line at info@radioparallax.com.
Stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing.